Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight will be Frank Nieland, former co-host of this very radio show, author of the book The Secret World of Video Poker Progressives, about to be co-host of a brand new radio show, maybe, and jack of all trades, Crazy Man.
Should I at least say hi?
Hi. No, you can't say hi.
Okay, I take it back.
All right. We'll be talking to Frank in a few minutes if we can keep him quiet that long. Last week, unplanned, I threw out a conundrum over the air. It turned out that it created some distress on one of Michael's sites. Michael mentioned that it, last week that a total eclipse was of the sun was going to occur over much of the United States in 2017. And I mentioned that Christmas and New Year's in 2017 are on different days of the week. They are. New Year's is on a Sunday, and Christmas is on a Monday in 2017. I suggested that 5 months ago, during the holiday season, both Christmas and New Year's were on a Sunday. And so the trick to the conundrum was, in the first case, I was talking about the events of the same calendar year, separated by 11 and 3/4 months. And in the second case, I was talking about the same holiday season, days only 7 days apart, but which spanned two calendar years. So Christmas 2011 and New Year's 2012 are both on a Sunday. But if we're talking about Christmas 2012, that's going to be on a Tuesday. This is a leap year, so there's an extra day involved. The puzzle was one I first heard about and enjoyed some 30 years ago. Somewhat randomly, I spring it out, spur of the moment, and whenever somebody mentions a year, maybe somebody said they were born in 1964 or married in 1992 or went on a vacation to Finland in 2003 or something with some date, and I just might mention, did you know? Then in that very year, Christmas and New Year's are on different days of the week. And it's safe for me to do this because any year mentioned is always true. But Michael said this caused some distress on his site, so I told him we could talk about it on the air. So, Shaq, is there anything in my explanation that's unclear, or did I say something different tonight than I said last week?
No, you. everything you said was correctly, and I must admit that you fooled me too. Is you started out by talking about the Christmas season, which got me to thinking about the New Year's directly as a week after Christmas. So of course it's going to be a week later. And then you said in 2017, they are on different days of the week. And because you already put me in that mindset about thinking about a Christmas season, I didn't know what to tell this guy who said you were wrong either. So that's when I asked you, and then you explained it to me, and I thought, I should have got that.
So you fell into my little trap. That makes me very happy. We take life's pleasures where we can get them. We received an email from a listener named Paul, sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, about last week's show. Our guest was Jeff Hall, and he invented Blackjack Switch. Paul noted that he remembers seeing the game on the Playtech internet site back when it was legal for Americans to gamble on the site. Paul wanted to know if having the game on Playtech was a major factor in making the game a success. I didn't have a clue, so I asked Mike. Shaq's opinion was that the effect was minimal. So I sent Jeff Hall a note, and he said it's hard to know exactly what kind of exposure helps and by how much, but in his opinion, it was Casinos Royale marketing of the game by having these loud speakers on the sidewalk when you pass the Casino Royale, that was by far the biggest factor in the game's success. So that's our best guess on it. The World Series of Poker began earlier this week. I'm going to compete in it this year in the media event. So Shaq is currently trying to get media credentials. I think he's going to pass. I think he will get the media credentials. And if we're both able to make the media event, wouldn't surprise me that we have a last longer bet. We haven't worked out the amount, but my guess is going to be somewhere more than $99 and less than $101. But I don't know for sure. A few weeks ago, when Nolan Dalla was our guest, he's the media director of the World Series of Poker, Shaq mentioned that last year he laid 8-1 against Phil Ivey, winning the main event, the World Series of Poker, once he was in the November 9. At the time, Ivey had about 5% of the chips, meaning that laying 19-1 would be appropriate if stack size were a good predictor of success. The reason I'm bringing this up today is we got an email from Ed Miller on this that I hadn't seen until recently, and he said that 19-1 for a prediction of Phil Ivey's success was way wrong, because Phil Ivey is clearly one of the best poker players in the world. So Ed's best guess that the true odds were something like somewhere between 14-1 and 10-1 against Ivey. And as I recall, Michael, you basically agreed with Ed's assessment. Is that right?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that I don't dispute that Phil Ivey is one of the best poker players, perhaps the best. But when it comes down to the final table, I think that all those players are very strong poker players, and it's mainly going to be luck and your chip size and your stack size that determines who wins. So I think that Phil was not significantly better than the worst player at that table. So as you said, fair odds would be laying 19-1, and perhaps it should be 18 or 17-1. But I would have even laid 15-1.
All right, very good.
Did he win it?
He did not win it, and then there's not going to be a November 9 this year.
You know, I have to tell you, I was really sweating that bet because he actually did quite well, and I think his stack size got up to like a third of the chips, and I was worried about jumping off a bridge, and but he had a bad run of hands or something, and he lost.
Is it too late for me to take a retroactive bet against him?
Yes.
The we're having a political election this year. Now, there are sites where you can bet on who's going to win the presidential election, at least if you're not an American. Now, I looked last Saturday, and at Bovada, it was minus 175 if you bet on Obama and plus 145 if you bet on Romney, which means basically Obama was an 8-5 favorite, and the House was taking a vig on each side. So have the numbers moved in the last week, Michael?
Yeah, I checked this morning, and Obama is minus, 168, and Romney is plus 152.
So those actually, that must be a different site. Those are actually the same numbers, only the House is taking a less of a vig each way. And so it looks like they still average around 8-5, but the House has taken a vig of less.
Mm-hmm.
So have the internet betting on elections, has that been going on for a while?
Yes, I certainly have been doing it since I started betting on the internet. The first election would have been the 2001, and I know I saw those bets there. And but internet gambling only came along about 96, so I'm not sure if they had it on that election.
Well, I did see a bet that I can actually advise our listeners on, and that was on the Ladbrokes.com site. Now, they listed the odds for the Republican vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can bet that Tim Tebow is going to be the vice presidential candidate, and you can get 200-1 if you are correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this strikes me as a particularly poor bet, since you need to be 35 years old to become president or vice president, and Tebow is a decade or so younger than that. So I want to give all our listeners advice to avoid that bet.
That's a real bet.
That's a real bet, yes.
Wow.
And I think Sarah Palin's only 100-1 against, which I'll let other people judge whether or not that's a good bet. So let's introduce Frank Nealon. Why don't you introduce him, Michael?
Okay. Frankly, he's back. Frank Nealon was co-host on Gambling with an Edge for the first 6 months of the program. Frank has written The Secret World of Video Poker Progressives, which is by far the best book on the subject. Frank will be co-hosting a new national radio show beginning in a few days called Whatever Happens in Vegas is fair game to talk about. And this was our understanding of it at the time this was written. Frank Nealon, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Yes, it's odd, really strange to have that said to me since I used to be the one saying it. But yeah, great to be here again. I see you've redecorated.
Yes, we are in a different studio than when you were here. Now, we did mention your radio show, and before the show started, you were telling Michael and me that it's not going to happen.
Yes, I actually have a prepared statement. Can I read my prepared statement?
Please do. Yes,
okay, just a moment. Let me find it here. Okay, here it is. When the horseless rider travels through the seventh house, the foundation will leave to create the spiral aim, and the unbroken circle will be rent asunder. Oh, no, wait, that's an Nostradamus quatrain. Or no, actually, it's a breakup letter I wrote to an ex. Here it is, the correct statement. No comment.
No comment. That's your statement. All right, I see that Frank has progressed a lot in his life since he was last on the show. All right.
I could give you a little more than that. Would you like a little more than that?
If you wish.
I could just read more of the breakup letter. It's got some fun stuff about, you know, like 10 seals and a beast that rises out of a sea of intrigue.
I would think breaking up with you would be an interesting achievement.
I thought that was out of the Bible.
I was a ghostwriter on the Book of Revelations.
Oh,
a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, that explains a lot about you.
Yes, doesn't it?
All right. Now.
Let me go ahead and answer it seriously. It wasn't one problem. We had technical difficulties connecting from over the lines, so I couldn't hear him. When we did a test show last week, I couldn't hear what he was saying quite a bit. There was also some scheduling conflicts. There were a few creative differences.
Which one of he was creative and you were different, or was it the other way around?
The show that he really wanted to do was 100% pure guest interview.
Uh-huh.
So you... The show starts, guest comes on, and the show and the guest stays until the very end of the show. And honestly, you know, he's just as good at asking questions as I am, if not better. He has 20 years of radio experience, so he really didn't need me. And this was not, you know, known to me when I first started the project. So it was just a combination of things, but we have decided not to go ahead with it. And I liked your title better than ours, actually, for the show. That was What Happens in Vegas is Fair Game to Talk About. Can I use that if I ever do another one?
Yes. So as long as you're not going to use it, then there's no reason that you can't use that title for the show that you're not going to have. I have no objections whatsoever.
All right. Well, anyway, so there's a slightly more serious answer than my opening comment.
All right. So go ahead, Michael. Go ahead and follow that one up. I dare you.
Okay. On a different topic. Okay. Something that's always annoyed me is players that try to monopolize three video poker machines. I can see two. Okay, but there must have been times where you or someone on your team spotted a nice, juicy progressive and there were plenty of empty seats and you wanted to hold as many as you could. How many did you dare to hold and what is the etiquette in that kind of situation?
Well, if you saw people holding seats, you're saying there's eight seats on the progressive and there's two of you there. So you grab five seats or something like that? You're talking about people that do that?
Yes.
Okay. That wasn't us. One seat per player. When our team was operating, if we did not have a player for the seat and they weren't in the casino, physically in the casino, we would not hold a seat for them.
Why not?
Honor amongst thieves. You know, cross-team etiquette. We had agreements with the other team managers not to do such things.
That's a good agreement, but what if you wanted to protect the seats against recreational players.
We didn't.
Well, that's very sporting of you.
No. Anyone who wants to play can play. If we don't have a player for the seat, have at it. As a matter of fact, I have held seats for non-team members.
Now,
when I was living up in Lake Tahoe, we used to keep a seat open for off-duty casino personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an agreement with the opposing team that was up there. This seat stays open for the bartenders and the cocktail waitresses and the people that want to come play this when they get off duty. And we would keep a seat open specifically for casino employees. We weren't all that monopolizing.
Now, would you still honor that today? For example, some casino is doing a really juicy promotion and all but two seats are taken. Would you take both of them or just one? And you might take both thinking that you'll call a friend and tell him, get down here, this is good.
I am a very fast two-machine player, and I played two machines for so long that my back and my muscles and everything is set up to where I fatigue slower and can play for longer if I'm playing two machines. I find one machine positioning very uncomfortable, putting your arms in front of you. It just doesn't grok for me. So if it was a casino where two-machine play was allowed, I would probably do it. If it's against the rules of the casino, absolutely not.
Okay.
How many people today would you guess in Vegas playing mostly video poker progressives make, say, $30,000 a year or more?
Well, it would be impossible for me to answer that question without, having some sort of crystal ball to peer into to know what people are making. I can tell you how many people actively pursue progressives, and my guess is that they probably make $30,000 or more a year.
All right. So how many people would that be?
8 to 10.
8 to 10.
Hmm. Under a dozen.
I was able to work out that last bit from the first time.
Just checking.
Now, you have... Now, Michael and I each create strategies that we produce,
mm-hmm.
and our strategies are highly in sync with each other. We each have our different stylistic differences, but they're basically the same. So how would a strategy that you would produce for a progressive be different than ones Michael and I would produce for a 4,000 coin royal?
All right. I will answer that question after sharing a funny tidbit. Just yesterday, I was playing Deuce's Wild Machine,
uh-huh.
and a nice lady sat down to my left that had one of your strategies, Bob.
Uh-huh.
And on my right, I saw at the top of a strategy chart, it said Wizard of Odds. And I looked at that and I went, wow, that's really weird.
Getting ready for the show.
And of course, I mentioned to them, hey, you got to watch the show tomorrow. So they're probably listening. So go out to the couple yesterday that were using opposing strategies.
Did you particularly want to say hi to the one on the right or the one on the left?
Well, I do prefer girls, Bob.
What was... good.
Okay, right. So the answer to the question.
How are your strategies different?
Progressive strategies can't be static. So you can't, like for instance, Induces Wild, Ace 10 does not beat a redraw in Induces. So you're not even going to have Ace 10 on the strategy. It's just going to be absent.
Correct.
For a progressive, you have to have it on the strategy with a number at which point it becomes correct. To hold that over a redraw. And the way that I've shown people how to do that in my book is you make a little grid pattern. So you have the royal draw on the left and then all the different things that it's going to, at some number, compete with and then eventually beat. Also, your strategies, your advanced strategies, deal with flush penalties and straight penalties and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, a straight penalty or a flush penalty for a static non-progressive strategy simply causes you to do something else. For progressive strategy, it causes you to do the same thing, but at a different number. So they're handled somewhat differently. The thing that I have seen and why I wrote this large section in my book on how to do progressive strategies is people will take multiple non-progressive strategies to a casino for a single progressive. And the most extreme case of this is I saw someone with 20 sheets.
So one was first royal.
You're laughing.
Well, I do that. I have a royal. I have a 8-5 bonus poker progressive that I'll play at a 4,500 Royal.
Uh-huh.
And I'll have another strategy that I'll play at a 5,000 Royal. And I have another strategy that I'll play at a 55.
They had 20 strategies for every $100 of meter rise. And it was actually a progressive that we used to play at around 8,000 was, you know, a good win. And so they had an 8,100, an 8,200, an 8,300, 400, and so on up to 11,000. Unfortunately, the meter went to 11,500. What they actually did is about 11,200, they didn't know how to play anymore. And I guess they were really concerned about it because they left, went home, and printed out another 10 strategies. And by the time they came back, it was...
You are kidding me.
No.
How bad would it have been to use the 11,200 strategy?
Look, this wasn't me. I don't know, but that's what they did. They came back and it was down. So the goal here is to have one single strategy.
Okay.
And on that strategy are all the things that you're going to need to change as the meter goes up on a little chart, which is very easy to read. And I don't know about you, but I have a much easier time memorizing a progressive strategy for a particular game type than I would 20 different static strategies for all different meter amounts. So, but they're very different the way that I do them. The nomenclature is similar, but you know that. You've seen my strategies.
And I found I couldn't read them, but I hadn't worked with them enough.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm sure they work. I know the people. I know the guys you work with, and all of you are sharp.
Well, thank you.
All right. If you've been listening to the show since I started co-hosting, you'll know that I have an interest in what I call deconstructing slot machines. I will sit at a casino and record about half an hour of play on my iPhone. Then I'll hire someone to record every single spin in order to get the exact order of the real strips and figure out exactly what return this game was set to.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that your team used to play real the slot machines.
Sure.
So
still do.
So you must have had some knowledge about the mathematics of these games, mm-hmm. like everything besides the progressive returns this, and the probability of the progressive is that. So how did you get this information?
Well, quite a long time ago, and this is back in the 90s, we did actually have somebody, I didn't personally. Matter of fact, I was not involved in this at all because it's a bit shady, but there was somebody on the payroll who was an insider. That is not something I did, nor is it something that was done recently. That, as I said, was in the 90s. So we did have a leg up on how the chip-controlled slots were programmed. And a lot of that information hasn't actually changed. So I don't know if this is an ethical issue. It's kind of like benefiting from a medical advancement that, you know, was contributed to by Joseph Mengele or something. You know, how this information the person that got this information, in my opinion, did something very wrong that I would never have done and broke the law. But that information was passed on to me. I didn't even know where it had come from when I was told this stuff. So I don't really feel guilty. But yes, we did have some inside information.
Sounds like you feel a little bit guilty.
I do. I do feel a little bit guilty that, you know, that I know stuff that other people aren't supposed to know. And, you know, what can I say?
Would you feel less guilty if you told our audience what it was that you
know? I don't think that would be a good idea.
Oh, okay.
What we do now, though, is what he does.
All right. Good. So what do you do?
Record hands, then? Take a little video, and go back and crunch some numbers and do frequency studies. And of course, if you do this, you're well aware of the fact that certain things are impossible. You can't have 0.5 sevens on a reel. It's got to be one or two. It can't be zero or, you know. So you can, with a very small number of spins, you can actually get pretty close on some of these games to figuring out what the chipset is.
Now, there's a large amount of slot machines these days which have must hit by numbers on it. Sometimes there would be a major and a minor. For example, the major must hit by 200 and the minor must hit by 20 or something like
mm-hmm.
that. Can you use the information in your book to determine whether the best number, where should you get on it? Now, obviously, if it hits at 200 and you can get on at 199, good luck. Then that's a real good time to get on.
Yes.
But if you...
Not necessarily, but yes.
But it's getting on at 168. It's probably too early. So how do you, can you use the information in your book to narrow it down as to where you should get on?
When must hit buys, and I guess that's what we're calling them. We used to call them no jackpot requireds, but
okay,
it's because they don't hit based on something that appears on the screen. And the original ones we called the cash blitzes or the super secret play. It was actually they had them at the horseshoe on video poker,
uh-huh.
So that was nice. This type of meter was not that prevalent when I wrote my book. It was mostly, my book was written in 2002. Though there is an entire subheading, it's quite long, called No Jackpot Required in my book that does detail the equations on how to figure out how much the progressive meter contributes to the return of the game. So every game in a casino is going to be different. Every slot, you know, manufacturer, they're not going to all have the same return. But you can figure out what the meter is contributing, and yes, the equations for that are in there. Since slots typically range from, would you agree with this, about 86% return on the low end to about 94% on the high, Michael?
Yes, I would.
Okay. So what you could do is you could take the formulas in my book, plug in a worst-case scenario. You're not going to want to plug in a best-case scenario. But just err on the side of caution, and then, yeah, you could figure out exactly at what point to play them. Now, we did this just recently, played one we hadn't played before. It was one of those ones that has to hit by 1199.
Uh-huh.
Crunched the numbers and found out it was a play at 1196.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Time to avoid that one.
So my warning to the people out there is don't play these things if you don't know the equations. They are counterintuitive. The progression is logarithmic or, you know, nonlinear. The difference between playing like a must hit by 500, if the play number is 480 and you get on at 476 and think, oh, it's just $4 less.
You could lose $1,000.
Yeah, it's just $4 less, but that $4 less turned it from a 2% edge to a 2% hold. The differences are minute. That's very sensitive, and don't play something unless you have crunched the numbers, figured out what the return of the game is, and really know what you're doing. They're very dangerous, and they're all different. And I see a lot of people sitting down at these things with playing at a 4% hold, banging away, thinking they're making money. And it's, I have actually walked up and told a couple people, said, listen, you're getting on too early, because I just felt so bad for them.
But it's good news for the rest of us if they do.
Yeah, but you know me. I'm kind of a nice guy.
All right.
I don't just play one on the radio.
All right. It's your turn to ask the nice guy question, Michael.
Can you expand on when you said that the meter rises logarithmic?
The return, how the return goes up is the difference between $15 and $16. Let's say one of these ones is very common. They have to hit by $20.
Yes.
The difference between $15 and $16 on the meter is negligible, if not non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between $16 and $17 is barely noticeable. The difference between $17 and $18 is substantial, and the difference between $18 and $19 is off the scale dramatic. It's just, even though it's a dollar, the dollar means more as the meter gets higher.
Okay, let's say that the meter starts out at 100 and must hit by 200.
Uh-huh.
Mathematically, would it be equivalent if the point at which the jackpot was going to hit was determined randomly on a uniform basis between 100 and 200?
It is.
Okay. Okay. I get it. All right. So, on another topic, on your video poker teams, how were the winnings distributed between the players, the investors, and the managers on the team?
Ah, okay. Well, they weren't.
They weren't distributed.
Owner gets all the money.
Oh,
so was every were the players played on an hourly basis?
Yes. Players were played hourly. We had a small bonus for dollar royals was $200.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how big the royal was. So $20,000 royal, $200. $9,000 royal, $200. That was standard. Quarters were 100. Now obviously that's not a consistent ratio. But we primarily played quarter progressives to feed the players. So we played them almost at break even just to give the players something to do so that they would be making enough income to stay working for us so that we could have them for the big plays. $10 to $12 an hour was the hourly wage.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, this is back in the 90s, so that was more money back then. That model of employer-employee has pretty much vanished.
In favor of what?
Equal partners. Equal partners. Everybody gets a piece. Everyone shares the win and the loss. And there's usually a signing bonus for whoever hits it, ranging between 2 and 5%.
What is the reward for the people investing the team money?
Profit.
Well, let's say that you put together a team and some people are putting the money on the table to bet with and some people are playing. How do the profits get split between them?
Everyone that plays now gets an even share, and I'm talking currently.
Yeah.
And everyone plays.
So he's saying there are no investors who are
no
not
investors.
Players.
Everyone's a player, everyone's an investor, and it's split evenly, even though obviously some of the people that I do business with are slower and some are faster. We don't care about that, you know.
But what if someone came along and said, I'm a great fast player, but I have no money to invest. Can I be on your team?
Oh. Well, yeah. You would probably put them down as an hourly player or give them a small piece of their action or, you know, make a case-by-case basis. I mean, it's not like we have a rule against this. It's just almost every single person, less one that I currently work with, is an ex-team manager. They're not team players. They're actually ex-managers of teams themselves.
And they've been doing this for 30 years or something.
20 to 30 years. And have done nothing else but play progressives their entire life. Yeah.
Is there a big difference between playing video poker progressives today as a sole practitioner versus being part of a team?
Yes. The latter is profitable. The former is impossible.
Why is it impossible?
You know, it's not impossible. There was this guy... Jim, we used to call him the Weekend Warrior, and he actually had, I have no idea why he won. He was a chemical engineer making about $400,000 a year in California, and he would come out, get off early, come out every Friday and play the highest progressive he could find Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The man was an Iron Man. I've never seen anyone play longer hours without falling. And he actually made several hundred thousand dollars the 2 or 3 years that he was doing this. And he did it by himself. But my goodness, what a constitution you would have to do that sort of thing. You can't play a progressive that could take, you know, a day and a half to hit by yourself without relief, because the second you get up from your machine, you're going to have to walk away from an even higher meter than you sat down at. So you must have at least a husband or a wife. I would prefer a wife to relieve you. I mean, progressives are not something to do solo.
And there's the scouting. How would this person find this?
That's the other problem. You know, if you really wanted to scout all the progressives in Vegas of note and interest, and we really include the neighboring cities, you know, as well, you're looking at about 80 to 90 hours a week of work.
Just
scouting. So now imagine you find something.
And that's hitting each one twice or what? That's hitting each one every day? Or
no, that's just to get through all of them once.
Get through all of them once. It takes 80 hours.
Yeah. So now let's say you find something and you've been up for 18 hours and driving around and you've got, you know, 300 miles in your car and you go, oh, great, I found it. Yeah. You're going to have to call in your partner at this point and say, okay, I found one. You take first shift, I'm going to sleep, see in 8 hours. It just doesn't work to do it by yourself if you want to be serious about it.
Very good.
I mean, sure, you can walk through a casino, see a high progressive, sit down and play. It's a great edge if it's up. But to do it for a living, I don't think it works on a solo, you know, business model. Mm-hmm.
So back when you had players on an hourly wage,
yeah,
were you ever worried about their honesty?
Only when I was awake. No, wait, I had a few nightmares about it, too.
Well, how did you protect against dishonest players?
Obviously, there was a screening process. You know, we used live poker skills and tried to read people's, you know, personality. That works to a certain degree. You can pick up signs on dishonest people. But we also had undercover security people that would watch them, make sure that they were recording what they said they were recording. I don't know that it's a rule, but it certainly, the two seem to be correlated, is people that steal also don't tend to be very smart. We did have one player We always had them make a log card. So you had to write down your buy-ins. And we had one player turn in... they'd apparently managed to lose $120 on 50 plays of a two-coin dollar, which is really, really a good trick. But, you know, they write down the meter amount, then write down what their buy-in was. And they had had two buy-ins close by when the meter had only... They'd only managed to pull off 50. They put in 100 and lost 120. You know, so there were some errors like that, but we did have undercover people.
I've played machines like that that really suck in money to bet. I've played machines like that, I'm sure.
We also applied a mathematical formula to their records to look for standard deviation and things like that to flag people that were possibly doing something wrong. And what we found is the most common kind of stealing was people stealing off of large wins. So maybe they had a $1,500 straight-up win on the machine, but they turn in 1,400, and it doesn't show up right away, but it does show up over long-term records. So we were able to catch most of them. I hope.
But do you think that you may have unfairly fired some honest players because they were just unlucky?
No, absolutely not. We never fired anybody for being unlucky. We never fired anyone for losing, and we never fired anyone without absolute proof of dishonesty.
So somebody is three standard deviations unlucky, but
that's not what we cared about. Because actually, that's one another thing that we were looking for is you're supposed to lose every now and then. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to have huge losses and huge wins. The folks that were stealing often minimized their losses. So they didn't have the same swings. They had a different variance rate. So, but no, we didn't fire people for losing money. My best friend, a fellow by the name of Gary Ford, he's dead now, went 6.5 months without hitting a royal. And he was our fastest player. And he actually came up to me one day and said, listen, all I'm asking is, if you're going to fire me, give me a couple weeks' notice. And I'm thinking, what? What is he talking about? You're our best player. Turned out that he hadn't hit a royal in 6 months. You know, we didn't notice. We didn't care about that sort of stuff. Play accurately. Don't make any mistakes. Show up on time. Be there when we call you in the middle of the night. That's all we cared about.
Now, back when you had video poker teams, there were competing teams. Do you have any interesting stories about shenanigans that one team played on the other that you are particularly proud of or that you can tell on the air?
We called him the enemy, or we called him Charlie.
Charlie, yeah.
Do you want a story of something that they did to us, or do you want a story of something that we did to them?
We got about 4 minutes. You can allocate them.
All right. Well, one of the ones I was most proud of, I think I put this one in the book, but it was just so funny if you'd been there, is I saw an enemy scout looking at the Hilton dollar. And I knew from where he would walk in to go back to his car where he would be headed. So we ran over to the opposite side of the bank, and my friend and I played as fast as we could on two machines, so the meter would be going up very, very quickly. Now he crunched his little numbers, as good scouts do, and figured out, okay, it's going to get to a play in about an hour. So he immediately ran over to the phone, and the Hilton had kind of one of those L-shaped phone banks, so I got right around the corner so I could listen to what he was saying, and I heard him say, okay, bring the team in at 2:15. Well, by the time they got there, it wasn't a play yet, because now it went back to no one playing as soon as he walked out the door. So the team showed up. Again, I got somebody that I knew wouldn't recognize to listen to what he was saying, and found out that he told the team to then come back at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we locked the bank up at 3:50. And he actually ended up having to pay his entire team 2 show-ups and never got a seat.
Oh, dear. Sounds like you might be proud of that one.
We also got their beeper codes.
You got their beeper codes.
Yeah, so we could intercept. We could intercept their beeper because they had one of those ones. It was just over radio signals, and we figured out what they were doing. And then we found out they had done the same thing to us. So we were sending misinformation over the beeper number channel. But yeah, you name it, we did it, man.
If somebody wanted a copy of your book, The Secret World of Video Poker Progressives,
yes.
Where should they get them?
My website or Huntington Press. Huntington Press has them. Gambler's Bookstore has them. So if you're local here in Vegas, you could just hop over there and buy a copy. I'm sure that would make Anthony and everyone over there very happy. Or you can get them directly from my website, and that is progressivevp.com. So the word progressive, V as in video, P as in poker, .com.
That has the progressive VP has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
Though he is a progressive VP, right?
Frank, it's been a pleasure. It brings back pleasant memories from when we uncontrollably giggled over the air every Thursday night. So I thank you very much for coming on the air.
Well, you know, it's absolutely my pleasure. Anytime you want to interject a little humor, I guess I'm here for you.
Well, good. All right.
I bring a bottle of nitrous oxide in my back pocket and release it into the the studio. That's my secret.
That would work. Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Well, we certainly learned a lot about playing on a video poker team, and I found that story about stealing the beeper codes and overhearing other people's conversation very interesting.
If we take him for drinks afterwards, there are plenty of other stories, I assure you, some of which he's very proud of.
Hopefully he'll bring the nitrous oxide.
Oh, well, good. I actually don't think he needs it. I think he can manufacture it kind of by himself.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. So, what's happening at the various Wizard websites?
Okay. On Wizard of Vegas, I found an old review that I lost on Louis Anderson's show, so I just added that. And on Wizard of Odds, I've added three things. One is a game called Power Baccarat 98, which is a Baccarat variant found at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore, which has conventional Baccarat rules, but before they deal any cards, they roll a die. And if it lands on a 3, then they increase the payoffs. So it offers better odds than regular Baccarat. And I added an article about gambling in Panama, and I know that I already wrote three about this before, but I also wrote an article for Casino Player magazine on the topic, which they never ran and they stiffed me on, so I asked at least release the rights to this article back to me, which they agreed to, so I just posted that, which was meant to be a magazine article. And finally, one of the toughest games out there to mathematically analyze is called Lunar Poker, which is like Caribbean Stud, but it involves the option to draw up to 5 cards and to force the dealer to draw another card. So the number of combinations in this game is astronomical. And I've never been able to analyze this game despite being asked many times. But on another website, they're claiming that the game has a 2.3% house advantage, and they offered a little bit of information about it. So basically, I culled what information I did know about the game and threw it all on a page on Lunar Poker. So I wish it had a complete analysis, especially one that I did, but it doesn't. But at least it's something to hold you over. And, yeah, so have a look at that.
Very good. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In June, which starts in about 4 hours here in Vegas, the big promotion is half-price gas cards for your play. For 8,334 points earned in June, you can redeem those points for $25 in cash or redeem the same points for $50 Chevron gas card. There's a limit of 10 of these gas cards for the month. Assuming you value Chevron gas cards the same as cash, this is like double points for the entire month for the first $83,000+ that you play. Now, some of us regularly play a lot more than that, but for most players, this is equivalent to double points all month long. At the Palms, every Saturday night in June, the Palms is having a drawing for a new Honda Civic, which is worth slightly less than $20,000, or you can take the cash rebate or the cash alternative, which is slightly less than $16,000. On both Friday and Saturday nights, starting tomorrow, they will have a preliminary drawing at 7 p.m. 10 people will win drawing tickets. The top 5 will also win cash to go along with their drawing tickets. A total of $1,600 is given away each night. The 10 winners from Friday, 10 winners of Saturday, will then compete for the car immediately after the Saturday night drawing. Must be there to win. For the past several months at the Palms, they've had a loss rebate program for new members from outside Clark County. This is for money lost in the first 24 hours you have your card. Previously, the limit for this was $500. Now they've boosted it to $1,000. The money you collect is in free play, and it takes at least 2 separate visits to get it all. There's also provision where loss rebates on table games get up to $1,000 worth of half-value chips. We've spoken about loss rebates several times in the past. If you're eligible, they are a good deal. Make sure you read and understand the rules before you begin and that you are able and willing to come back sufficient number of times to cash it. Now, on videopoker.com, periodically I talk about one of their games. Tonight I want to talk about Ultimate Four of a Kind Bonus. This is a six-coin game where you get to the bonus round every time you get a four of a kind. For the bonus round, they shuffle a deck of 53 cards, including a joker. You get one through four picks, depending on which quad you get and whether or not it was dealt. You can get 200, 300, or 400, depending on which card you pick over out of the 53. Or if you get the joker, you get 3,996. As a total, whether you've however many you've picked before, that's the max. The bonus round adds more than 2% to the base pay schedule. So the Ultimate Four of a Kind games themselves you see in a casino look like they have lousy pay schedules. But the Ultimate Four of a Kind adds 2%, so they're not as lousy as they look. Also keep in mind that the bonus round changes the correct strategy. If you go to the wizardofodds.com website and check out this game, you'll see that when you get three picks for four aces, the three picks is worth about 900 credits. Therefore, if you were playing double-double bonus, instead of four aces being worth 800 or 2,000, you should create a strategy where four aces are worth 1,700 or 2,900 to take account of the bonus picks. So it is not the same strategy, but with the software out there, it's easy. It's not hard to figure out. All right, Michael, next week we're going to have Jason Bean. Who's Jason Bean?
Jason Bean was our guest the first show that I co-hosted back in February. He is a sports handicapper and professional sports bettor. And we're going to be talking to him about sports again. And this time we're going to concentrate on football and golf.
Not baseball.
Well, baseball is already, season is already halfway through. So you never know if a baseball question will bubble up. But I think Jason is excited to talk about the new football season. And he's quite the expert on golf. So I wanted to pick his brain on that.
Good. We don't talk about betting on golf very frequently. That'll be interesting. All right, Frank, did you want to say something about betting on golf?
Well, I don't know that we've ever mentioned it, but, you know, my mother came in second in the country as a female golfer.
I think
she was on the PGA Tour.
I think, actually, you mentioned it twice. But, good, yes.
My Uncle Arnie was actually Arnold Palmer. We used to go over to his house for dinner every Saturday. So I grew up around golf. It's a fun game, great game. That's all I want to say.
All right, good. All right. Beginning July 10th, I'll be teaching a free six-week semester of video poker classes at Samstown on Tuesday afternoons. The class mix at Samstown is not identical to the ones I teach at South Point, simply because the casinos offer a different machine mix. So if you're going to be in town during that time period and you're interested in video poker classes, the schedule you can find on bobdancer.com. This weekend, I'll be playing in an invitational poker tournament. I don't get these offers very often, and poker isn't my normal game, so I've been practicing a little bit on southpointpoker.com. Now, in a few weeks, we're going to have Arnold Snyder here 2 weeks in a row talking about his poker book, so I've read them and trying to practice what he preaches. Now, practicing online is a lot different from practicing in a casino, but it's better than no practice at all, so I'm trying to get ready for this invitational poker tournament. Good.
Say hi to Arnold for me. He was one of my favorite guests when we had him on.
I will be happy to say hi to Arnold for you. All right. Now, Michael, a couple weeks ago, recently, you sent me an email where you mentioned country line dancing. And I don't remember what it was that you said, but what is it about country line dancing?
Yeah, I said if we ever had the time, I wanted to follow up on something you said earlier is is when we were talking about, I think with Jeff Hall, you mentioned that you used to be a country line dancing teacher.
Yes.
And this is something that interests me because when I lived in Baltimore, I took country line dancing lessons. So I guess to start, what level did you teach at and where were these lessons held?
Well, this is back in living near Los Angeles. They were taught at Denim and Diamonds, which is in Santa Monica. It was at a yuppie bar where the people in the classes were more interested in getting laid tonight than they were about learning how to dance. And so Frank's nodding that, yeah, he could have been a country line dancer if that's what it took. I would get to teach a couple nights a week, and we'd have one line dance and one either Texas two-step or waltz or West Coast swing or something like that.
Was this before or after the achy breaky?
Achy breaky was one of the ones, but it was in that time interval. We did boot scoot and boogie, and those were the current ones that we did. And there were also some older ones like slapping leather and tush push and Tulsa time. And since then, there have been thousands of line dances that come out. There are still some old favorites out there, but the new ones come out all the time. And the way they do them in California is going to be different than the way they did them in Baltimore or Texas or Wyoming or anywhere else. Although with the internet out there, I suspect some of those differences may be disappearing, but I'm not sure. I'm not into the line dance world anymore.
Okay. Where's a good place in Vegas to do country line dancing?
Okay. I'm not real sure. I would say Stoney's. There's a Stoney's just north of the South Point. There's also one in the northwest part of the valley. So there's a Gillies on the Strip. Now it's at Treasure Island. There is a Toby Keith's. I love this bar and grill in Harrah's. So I used to dance in country western bars a lot. That's actually where I met Shirley. But for now, since they're all so smoky, we have given up the country western dancing, and so now we switch to square dancing, which is done in non-smoking environments. Square dancing was definitely not in my top 200 things to do, but keeping Shirley happy was. So now we go square dancing, which is not at all the same as country western dancing.
It was lots of fun when I went with you.
Frank went for the lessons of, I don't know, 3 months, something like that?
Longer than that. I had a great time.
Well, good. And the clubs are still surviving without Frank.
I've been to Gillies, and I didn't see any line dancing going on there. Is it certain nights of the week?
Well, probably when I used to go at Gillies, and so there are certain times where they have the band, and when the band is playing, it is usually two-step or swing or whatever, the movement. But during the band breaks, then they would play the can music, and they would announce that this is going to be a particular line dance, and everybody would rush out there. So if you didn't see any line dancing at Gillies, I suggest you weren't there very long. But if you're there any time at all, I'm pretty sure you're going to find them.
Okay.
It's actually a good way to meet for people who don't have a dance partner, or you know you're going to get out and dance, that if that's something you want to do. And so a lot of people like it for that reason. All right, good night, everybody. Thank you, Frank. Everybody go out.
Yep, it was great. Thanks again.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.